Welcome to Tectulia, filmed in our Q4 studios in Guadalajara, Mexico. Today's a very special episode because we got Aníbal Abarca, our very good friend, and the host of his own podcast, which we're going to cross-promote today, called Startup Mania. Welcome, Aníbal.
Thank you, Matt, and thank you, Vidal, for inviting me. This is great to be here.
It's our pleasure. This is super cool.
Yeah, and then we got Vidal Gonzalez.
This is me
on the mic. So something happened this week, and Aníbal, I think you have a good knowledge of kind of the situation, which is there's a startup, and I just read about this called Yogame. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, it's Yogame.
Yogame, and it was doing. Let's see, with games and stuff like that. Tell us about what Yogame was. It was started in Mexico City, but what happened? Or it was in San Luis Potosi?
Yeah, I think we can talk about Yogame from different angles. One of the angles is the story and when Yogame started. They were part of 500 startups, even before 500 startups was launched, I think, or they were part of the first generation of 500 startups. Back then, I was sharing offices with my partners at Incu and Aventones. We were in Chihuahua, in La Condesa, and they were part of that same generation that kicked off 500 startups in La Condesa in Mexico City. So they were at the beginning of the boom of the, or let's say the first moments of the Mexican startup ecosystem. So they were around, I believe, since 2007, around that time. No?
And so this week it came out that they closed, and it was allegedly due to what people call fraud. I don't want to like accuse anyone of a crime, but it was some kind of, the numbers were not adding up.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, and I've been trying to poke my friends around the ecosystem and ask them, like, hey, what happened? What do you know? No one knows. No, the only thing that I've heard is what I've been reading in the newspapers, some friends, what they have posted in their social media, but it's nothing concrete. And there is the other angle that everyone is taking, that is talk about the gossip around it and why is that bad and what happened, and try to imagine what will happen, and I think that is not the topic that we should try to discuss, no, because at the end we don't know what really happened, and another important angle is that talking about that history of Yogame in the Mexican ecosystem is all the time that they were, and they were growing, and they were investing, and they were really pitching to the right investors, and they were pitching to the right market. They won contest, they raised money from the best VCs in Mexico. They ended up raising in the last round about $3 million. That is a significant amount of money. So something happened, and that is super strange. You know, like, how do you go through a due diligence for $30 million in VC and something just come out after a few months? Because this happened just about, I don't know, 6 to 4 months ago.
Really?
I remember sending Bismarck a note like, hey, have you heard about that? Like, it's a super important round. Like, they are really crushing it. It's a super interesting startup focused on educational games. They were growing into China, they were growing in different countries. So that was a huge success story for the Mexican startup ecosystem. And so then this happened.
I'm reading, so you know, so the basics are the company goes out of business, and it's probably gonna return most of that capital back to investors, given that, I mean, it would have been hard to spend that much that quickly and not have, like, you know, actually be trying to steal money. So it doesn't sound like it was anything like that. It was like there were some numbers that during diligence came up, and then when the investors got in and actually saw what was going on, one of the quotes here from a note that Bismarck read about it is from Diego Serbrisky, co-founder of Dallas Capital, said that investors will need to be more detailed in their due diligence. So it sounds like the investors came in and had a lot of questions after. And I've seen that before, you know, a company comes in and not to speculate at what happened here, but they come in and they say, you know, hey, here's our numbers. We're growing so much. You know, here's what's happening. And then when the investors get in on the board and they see the real numbers, or they maybe realize they hadn't done enough diligence, the investors don't feel like that they were given the true state of the business. But yeah, pretty shocking to see it close down that quickly. Now, we do have, Bismarck wrote a great note about it. Bismarck is our friend and one of the founders of Wiseline. And he wrote a note on Facebook. He said, you know, I think he stayed again away from the gossip. And it was more about kind of like, you know, there's a lot of situations like this. You have all kinds of companies that either over misrepresent. And I don't think that this is necessarily a bad thing for the Mexican ecosystem relative to US, because you could look at US examples like, what was that blood one?
Theranos.
Yeah, and you have, and that company is like $9 billion. It raised some crazy amount of money, and it turned out that their technology was not nearly as good as they said it was. And so Bismarck's point is more about the broader kind of like the trust that people place in you, and how your reputation ultimately matters more. And again, if a company's going to be worth a lot, it's going to stay around for decades, and things that you can do in a year or two to make it go better ultimately destroy a lot more than they save.
And thinking about that long-term vision, it's not only for the entrepreneurs, that is very important. No, we are here for the long term, and when you come out of college, like you start working somewhere, you start meeting someone, and you start probably doing business with some friends, and I think this is a good example to talk about the long-term vision of every entrepreneur. Like, we are going to be around even if that startup doesn't last. Like, if you fail in one endeavor, if you decide to separate from your partners, if that idea didn't work, you have to optimize not for the short term and make it successful no matter what, but you should be looking for the long term vision, and you should be thinking on, okay, how can I build these lasting relationships, these meaningful relationships, where I can add value to the ecosystem, but not only to the ecosystem as something very abstract, but it's something like, how can I add value to them, people that I care about, no?
Well, and I think one of the hard things about that is that you're taking a lot of risks. And so, you know, how do you maintain trust with people when you're taking risks? And, you know, you're not lying a lot of the times. You just misrepresent the risks, or you represent the risks completely clearly and things just go bad. And that's not your fault. And so, you know, I'm taking one of the things that Bismarck brought up is from a book that all of us really like, is The Hard Thing About Hard Things by Ben Horowitz. And the quote from this book is, when you're eating shit, don't nibble. And I think that's a really important, and I'll maybe try to... try to, like, if people don't go, what are you talking about? It's like, if something's going to go really wrong, get it all out up front. Like, because if you just let you know, problems dribble out and you try to like make up for them, and you try to take all these tasks that can kind of make it a little better or hide the real problem and hope that it goes away, well, ultimately you erode trust over time. However, when you come in right away, as soon as a problem starts, or when it's still manageable, or at least when you still have your trust and you say, this is what happened, it didn't go like we expected, and you take all your lumps up front rather than trying to, you know, hope it goes away down the line. Because ultimately you're just going to get more people involved. They're going to waste more of their time with you, more of their money with you. And when people find out that look what you did, it's going to seem a lot worse that you tried to cover it up.
Yeah. And that's what I refer with that long vision. Like, even if you are going to fail, okay, fail. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be the end of the world. Likely that company won't be alive after that, but you are going to be there, and your network is going to be there, and they will care about you being honest and you just being straightforward rather than lying And I think that is that short-term vision that is only optimizing for, I want to be successful in this particular endeavor, and probably I will destroy everything that is in that is after this. Mm-hmm. Because if you are really failing, that will come out.
Yeah, and I remember I was talking to one of the founders of Optimizely, and he said that when they started Optimizely, it was their third startup, and the previous two had failed pretty much. You know, they put stuff together, they tried it out, and it failed. And so, yeah, I think the benefits of the Silicon Valley is that failure is valued. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, you have two failed startups. No way we're going to fund a third one. It's almost like, oh, you've messed it up twice on other people's money. Sure, you can, you know, hopefully you've got all that out of the way and now we can fund you again. And repeat founders and people who do have experience at startups tend to do better whether or not they've failed or they've succeeded. Obviously, succeeding is a lot better, but, you know, it's not like if failure is going to come, better not ruin your reputation.
So I have to be honest, to me, these news are kind of very fresh. I'm even reading a lot of it on Twitter, posts by people that belong to the company, people around the entrepreneurial community saying that this is bad timing and does not represent what's going on in entrepreneurship in Mexico. But I think about Anibal, why do you think, I mean, why on earth would you do something like that when apparently you've been doing this for the last 8 years, you built somewhat successful products thus far, like why even do it?
It's funny because I think there are two things that I thought they were working very well. A few months ago when I was still in Mexico City with a friend, Jose Molina, we were hosting an event that it was once a month, kind of a meetup to talk about. The name was Disrupt City. And the idea of the meetup was to talk about different topics or trends that were creating disruption in our cities or that were changing the way we live. In one of those episodes, in one of those meetups, we invited Yogome to talk about education, and we invited other people that are important actors in the education and edtech industry. Mm-hmm. I didn't meet with the founders, but one of the, I think the product lead and someone who was very focused on the educational part of their games came to give a talk, and it was super interesting. And I saw their products, and I saw what they were building. They were partnering with Stanford to validate how these games were helping kids to learn math, to learn how to code. Like, they were really doing great stuff. That's what I thought, and everyone thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so, like, the applications were cool. Their approach on how to create education via games, how to enable the teachers in the classroom with their games. That was very cool. So I think they had a great story, and I saw their products, and they were great products as well. So on that, I think there's something to rescue from that. I believe those products have value. And also, they invested a lot on building a team. And Jupiter Lab have more experience than anyone probably in the technology industry building great teams, building large software teams, and there are high performance teams, no? So I think that's something that is valuable. And now what I feel is not cool is that all of those people that are used to work at Yogome, now they don't have a job. And I bet they are great developers, they are great designers, and they were building great products.
Yeah, I think if the market wasn't there, that's where the kind of the deception or the lack of integrity came in. And lying to yourself that you do have a market when you don't, I think is probably one of the worst mistakes you can make, because, you know, if you're saying your product's performant but it's not, you can fix that. But if in fact your way of going to market and your way of and you know, the number of people willing to pay for your product is not where you think it is. I mean, that's probably the biggest determinant of the value of the company. And you can't fix that. You know, you can't fix that ever. You know, you have to really be very honest about that all the time. And that's where they, I think that's where the big mistake was. And that seems, you know, you can see why people do it, but that's probably one of the worst things to deceive people on. It's like, you know, our products, you know, we have this feature done when it's not, okay, well, that feature is eventually going to come, or it's like, you know, we're a little ahead on our growth rate. But if you lie about who's buying your product, it just, you don't have any control about that. That's almost what the whole experiment's about, is to see, will people buy this ultimately?
And then I think one thing that we, I mean, I'm reading a lot of like stories from, I guess, what are now ex-Yogomi employees, and it's, I cannot avoid to feel bad for them. But I will also like to say that entrepreneurs should also take care of their people, because, I mean, going and joining a startup as an early employee and being treated or managed like that, because it even seems like when they decided to close the company, it was not the prettiest thing. And that hurts the community more than the act itself, because at the end of the day, people remember how they left the company.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I was reading one of the comments on Bismarck's LinkedIn post, and it was like, somebody said, that's very sad. The situation of the fraud cases burned the reputation of all Mexican entrepreneurs. And I don't think that's the case. I think that's way too much. But it's not like there's no repercussions from this. I think investors are still going to come into Mexico. You look at Rappi now, has like more than $1 billion valuation, and they have offices in Mexico City. That's obviously Colombian. Is it all Colombian? But you know, the successes of other companies will drive the investments and not the failures necessarily. But I remember when we were in Ho Chi Minh City, and we were hiring people there, and they still remembered when Atlassian
left abruptly.
They hired hundreds of people. They opened a whole office there, decided that it wasn't really working for them, and then they just shut it all down.
Yeah. I guess one big, learning for everybody is, building an ecosystem, especially one that is based out of high trust, like one that receives private funding, should be taken very seriously, and it's going to take a bit of time so that the rest of the entrepreneurial community in this part of the world reconstructs what has been damaged by this.
Weren't you telling me a story about this guy who got it was not a lot of money in the scheme of things, but it was like $50,000, and then he just left? Who is this guy? He took off he had a $50,000 grant and just went to Brazil or something.
In Mexico?
Yeah, weren't you telling about this?
Damn it.
I don't remember the name of the company, but it was kind of a crowdfunding company, no?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I was reading about that when I was looking for news about Yogomi.
It's just like, you know, we're playing a game with money. Once you have enough money to kind of provide for yourself, it's just the game. And if you take it too seriously, the real game is to build things of value. And community is probably the easiest thing, because however valuable the companies that we build will be, there's going to be a generation afterwards who takes that, plus all of the infrastructure, the people who are been trained and all that stuff, and they're going to do way better. And if you look at the contribution, the money's not going to matter too much. It's going to be, did you build that or did you take advantage of it? Were you a parasite or a builder? I think that's a much better way to evaluate yourself in the end, because it's going to give you a real result. Even if you build a great company, build a great team and leave on good terms, but fail, you know, it's a pretty good outcome. I was reading a note, again, it was Ben Horowitz, I think, about Bill Campbell. Mm-hmm. And it was in this blog post about when you're going to eat shit, don't nibble. And he's talking about Bill Campbell. And he started the iPhone company in 1992. Yeah. So he was just way too early. There wasn't cell phone, but he was building basically some kind of Palm Pilot iPhone type application, you know, it was hardware. And the team he put together went on to do great things. And he left a sterling reputation, but ultimately he took a lot of money, burned it all and failed without producing a profit. But he did it in a way that meant that he was the coach to Google and to many other companies, providing his insight and expertise. And ultimately, the community that he built became what we know as the Silicon Valley. And I mean, it wasn't by himself, but he contributed in a way that was massively value generating, despite the fact that his company failed.
Yeah, and then I think they mentioned the phrase of like, if you're gonna do something, at least build a good company.
I think he said that once when we were kind of stressed out, and I was like, shut up, Vidal, I don't want to hear. But it was kind of like, no, we just need to solve this fucking problem. And you're like, no, if nothing else, we're gonna build a good company, we're gonna build a good environment, we're gonna build a good product, and you know. Everything else will settle. And, you know, going home, you know, honestly, that's the only thing that's going to make you feel good at night.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously companies need to make money, but evidently not at this cost, right? Not at this cost.
Well, and you know what? It's like if you had been honest, if you had raised less money or at a much worse valuation, but you were honest, you know, ultimately you could have come out of that ahead, and maybe your next company is the one that goes, well, I mean, look at Stuart Butterfield. What was the picture application? I'm so uninformed for having a podcast, but he sold that. It was all right. I think he made about $30 million, but it wasn't like the Facebook multi-billion valuation. Came back, started a second company, and ultimately that's worth like $10 billion, like five to $10 billion now. It's like you're going to get a lot. What does Bismarck say? He says, you're going to get a lot of, it's a multi transaction thing. Every round builds to the next round. If you fake it in one round, the next round is going to be terrible for you because you're overvalued. One company doesn't work, the next one could. You know, it's and stop thinking so short term. I remember I was talking to somebody, just to give an example of an extreme of this kind of short termism. I was talking to somebody in Vietnam, and this has nothing to do with, you know, people in Vietnam are fantastic, but you know, they spent 35 years in a war in Vietnam. And so people just don't have the generation that's coming of age now is extraordinarily smart, very well educated, but they don't have that long-term culture thinking. And I was asking him, like, well, you know, what's your career plan? He's like, I don't have a career plan. I'm like, are you saving? He's like, I don't save. I was like, why not? Because the company's, you know, because the country's growing so fast, whatever you made 5 years ago doesn't matter because you're making so much more now. And because companies don't have a very long lifespan, in a culture, in Ho Chi Minh, they're all starting, they're all growing, that no one thinks, hey, my reputation is going to be with me in 30 years, because no one who's there now has a 30-year long reputation. The country was in shambles 30 years ago. And there's a lot to be gained by having that sense of building and earning and building a reputation. And when you have all that short-term thinking, there's only certain things you're going to be able to do. Yeah. All right, Vidal's...
I'm all worked up about it, but we're going to change gears.
That's why we have the little music breaks between sections, is to clear our palate. But the... Oh, man, if you read Twitter...
Yeah.
It is...
It's a mess.
Let's focus on something else. Anibal, so you drove all the way in to Q4 Studios in Guadalajara. Thank you so much. Tell us about your podcast, which is also recorded...
It's also recorded here. tomorrow we have a new recording here.
Okay, so what's it called? What's it about?
The name of the podcast is Startup Mania. So it all started as many other ideas that I have had by thinking on cool names.
That's the best way to start everything. God, I'm so on the same page with you, Aymar.
So similar to that, you mentioned in the last episode, in one of the episodes of Tectulia about Chambita, so I think it started kind of the same way, you know, think about like, this is a cool name and this is a good idea behind it. And Startup Mania came into something concrete this year when I was thinking on, I do want to do something around startups in Mexico. I want to create something. And probably it took me too long to start that or to start in making something real about that concept of Startup Mania. I always thought about it as a way to talk to the startups, to talk to the entrepreneurs about the key learnings that I have had and also some of my friends have had. Mm-hmm. And it came into something real earlier this year that I started listening to a lot of podcasts. I really like the Tim Ferriss show that he's talking about the key habits, the you know, like the morning routines and the books that the people read, and how they became titans, and that's the word that he uses, and that's the word that he uses in his last book, Tools of Titans. So inspire on Tim Ferriss, and then inspire on Reid Hoffman, that he later created another podcast called Masters of Scale, also interviewing entrepreneurs, but focusing on, in that case of Reid Hoffman, focus only on how they scale and how they scale really, really big, no?
Who are the type of people that you want to listen to your podcast, and what do you think they're going to get out of it?
I think the type of people that I want to listen to the podcast is everyone who is thinking about creating value. And we were talking about that earlier, is create something not only to create or not only to have these vanity metrics, and that vanity metric could be I raise this amount of money, but I want people who are thinking on adding value, who are thinking on creating something. The tagline is passion for creating, or those people who are willing to create something, who are looking to add value. Those are the kind of people that I wish they can listen to the podcast. To the podcast. So what happened is that I came to this post from Kevin Scott, his CTO at Microsoft, and he was. I liked the title, and I got engaged into that title, and then started reading. And the title was "We Are the Stories We Tell," and I just fell in love with that. Like, that's true. We are the stories we tell, and I want people to listen to the stories of these great entrepreneurs and creators that I'm chatting with. So, I've been in, and we met almost at the same time as I met Bismarck and as I met Adal. From Quesky, and I met Alberto Padilla from Brick and other companies. And even if I haven't been like a main character in the Mexican startup ecosystem, like I've been around, and that have gave me the opportunity to meet with these fantastic people that have great stories and that are creating a lot of value. And I have learned from them so much, and I have had so amazing conversations that I just wanted those conversations to be shared and those stories to be told. So that's what I wanted to do, to share their stories and for people to listen to these great people and to learn from them. So that's how I decided to create a Startupania and start telling those stories that I have been listening to.
Yeah, I think that's another great thing about podcasts is they're very easy to do, relatively. I mean, they do require some work. But it's such a nice way to get things that are not reported. You know, you're not going to go on the news tonight and hear anything like about these stories in the way that they're told or talk to people who are actually going to involve. It's going to be very high level. It's going to be somebody who's churning out 4 or 5 articles a day. Or on the other hand, you go on Twitter, and Twitter, let me tell you, we've been looking at this Yoga Me thing, is a mess.
Twitter is?
Yeah. There's the middle ground of actually telling stories in a way that's interesting and is meaningful that I think is going to be so valuable. And I think that's why podcasts are becoming so popular. I've started listening more and more and more.
But also, I think, I mean, there's an explosion on creation of content coming from what you would call regular people. And I guess I'm oversimplifying things because obviously everybody that is doing something creative is special.
You're not regular, but all you're
no. But what I'm saying is like it is becoming more sticky to put your ideas out there because at least, for example, I mean, everybody can write a tweet, right? And you have from very smart people to not so smart people writing their minds on Twitter, but. At least from telling your ideas to the public and at least investing the time to coming in, setting it all up, recording it and putting it out there in Anchor or whatever. I mean, sorry, I just disclaim.
We got to get Homebrew to retweet us
We do. But to me, and I guess to what Anibal was describing, doing this podcast has been quite interesting, because you would not imagine that people want to.
I think it's all about mid form. It's about people, because short form content's basically worthless. It's like you point to an erection, or you can go and have like a primal scream of like, oh, I can't believe Trump. Like, I'm just tired. I'm like so tired of that now. I'm so glad I haven't been in the United States for the last 2 years, because I mean, I don't know how like my body could handle that.
I guess in Mexico
much.
We have that story as well. No, we have elections, we have politics, and I think we all fell in the same trap. And at the end, that is a reflection of what is the society that we want to do. And that is what I mean when we are the stories we tell.
Yeah, and if you can go and tell a story in something that takes 20 minutes to read, or maybe 5 minutes to read or something like that, I feel like that's really powerful and engaging. And I haven't been doing enough blogging. Maybe I'm trying to make up for it with the podcast. But, you know, I remember I did a blog post. It took me 10 minutes to write 2 years ago, and I was talking about why I was coming to Mexico. People still bring that up. Like the first time I meet them, like, oh, I read your blog. It's like, that was the most valuable 10 minutes I spent in like the last, like my whole life.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't spend any time on it. Just whack, you know, send. I was like, I'll write a good blog post later. And that really connected people, because I told a very short, simple story. Another guy, Eder, at our
yeah,
work.
Yeah.
He started this, and it's not a podcast. It doesn't have to be podcasts or blogs or anything. He started a little series where he would do the widget of the week. Have you seen this? It's
impressive.
Incredible. You know what I would compare it to? Is those people who make the really fancy cakes. You ever seen those shows?
Yeah.
They make a regular cake, is a cake, right? You don't know if it tastes good.
It takes
or not.
Care.
But you know, it's a cake, and it's like the Mario Brothers cake, or it's a fancy cake that has a dolphin on it. It's like these fancy, and they're like these obviously highly skilled chefs, but they do something a little fun. And then they have these shows like, you know, with like a cake a week. I think it's like that. It's like he is like the front end design that he does. He'll do these little things where it's like they're so smooth and so cool. I recommend you check him out. We should send a link out after this article. But the point is, he tells a little story about, hey, here's how I make something. Here's how I do something. And then he has this very beautiful thing at the end. And I think that kind of storytelling, there's not nearly enough of it.
Yeah. And then I think that more people should dare to just create, because it is kind of scary, but like nobody will judge you by like taking a risk. I think it's quite an interesting thing that you're doing, Anibal, with your podcast, and like kudos to you to doing that and putting the voices of many entrepreneurs out there and how they've gone about their businesses and their careers. And we should encourage more content creators like you.
Well, and thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me. You should participate in one of the next episodes of Startup Mania as well.
The problem is Startup Mania is in Spanish. And
but you are learning Spanish.
I'm learning.
It's getting better.
Yeah, we want to talk about putting yourself out there. My IQ would drop about all, like, whatever's left. It would just be very slow, and I'm self-conscious about it.
It's fine.
You guys are so good at...
No, but we just have to do it. I'd love to have you both in one of the next episodes of Startup Mania.
I want to come in and do it in Spanish.
Let's do it.
Let's do it in Spanish. You'll do the talking for me, but all. Well, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll do one last segment for this episode. But Startup Mania, go Anchor FM and slash. Spotify and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anchor FM / Startup Mania. Okay. All right, we're gonna do last segment today. We're gonna close. We were thinking about creators today, I guess. Startup founders and how it can go well, how it can, you know, maybe not go so well.
Yeah.
And Anibal was saying that he's noticed these days that everybody at the office, we're doing this like series of things where everyone has like this crazy hobby. Everybody's boxing. Or they're brewing beer. Vidal, you said you were doing something at home.
I'm trying to grow my own SCOVY for kombucha.
That's the living animal that lives in your drink.
And it's just fucking awesome. Like that's the thing. Is like, I wouldn't imagine that I would like it so much to just like do something very random.
It's not random. I mean, it's going to help your stomach and your whole immune system or whatever, right? And it's slightly alcoholic.
Hopefully. Yeah,
if that works.
if that thing gets to live, but
Like, I think what Animal was saying is, like, people are getting into interesting, active, like, geeky hobbies, right?
Yeah.
And that's cool.
I think it's partially because of Instagram.
Why?
Because people, I mean, like, you know, people do all this cool stuff, and then you take a picture of it, and you put it on Instagram. Or is it, do you feel like it's like an intrinsic, like, I want to feel like I'm a real human or something? Or is it for show?
I think it's a generational thing that is getting contagious, that if you're not doing something really meaningful, you're feeling like you're being left behind. That's how I feel.
Maybe it's, you got to tell a story about yourself.
About what I'm podcasting?
This is Anibal talking about his podcasting hobby, and obviously
I always joke with my wife, like, these couples that they're always saying, like, oh, I love you, and they send pictures on Instagram and happy birthday, my their dear love, and all stuff. So I'm totally not that into posting what I'm doing on Instagram. I guess it's because of that. It's just like, hey, I would like to take my ideas out and just create something, no? And it's pretty cool. But I can see that maybe in some cases, it's more about just showing that I'm doing something and then get a lot of likes after that post, no?
Yeah, if you can share the Tectulia link with all your friends, Vidal and I live and die on how many...
We do.
Yeah, you gotta do it.
Yes, please.
Share it. My mom has listened to all of the episodes.
Yeah.
So that's three in the plus column.
My mom doesn't understand in English. That would be cool.
Just push play. Get the stats. No, but I think one of the trends that we're seeing is much less materialism in this generation.
Yeah.
I think it's very much in Mexico, just the same as in the United States. People are, you know, when I was a kid, having a nice car, I spent all my time when I was a teenager building cars and painting them and redoing the engines and stuff. Because so you could have like a really good car, and we didn't have very much money. You know, I couldn't just go out and buy a nice car. So we had like, it was showing that I had like some value to refurbish a car, but it was very much like a material thing. But I think like, you know, the economy has gotten, you know, over the past many years, it's like you can get a lot of the things that used to be, you know, like a gold chain. Like, you can get a gold chain. Like, having a gold chain doesn't show. And that's how, you know, people used to dress, like really nice clothes, gold chain, nice car.
But I also think that prior to this explosion of information, and like, obviously the internet has been with us for like north of 15 years. I'm not saying that, but like, with the amount of information that is being shared, I believe the barrier of entry to say like, oh, that looks easy, I can do that. Like, the amount of times I've YouTube searched how to do something, and I'm like, I can do that. It's allowed me to feel more confidence in what I can do. And I think it's getting to the point where, like, and now I can brew my own coffee using that hipstery technique.
Oh, okay.
I saw at a cafe, right?
You poured in the filter of it all.
Yeah, I mean,
no, but you're doing like the V90 and all that?
The Chemex and
all that.
And then what is it called? Somebody that brews coffee at a coffee shop?
Barista.
The barista. The other day at a fancy coffee shop in Guadalajara, when I asked for like whole beans, she's like, do you brew your own coffee? I'm like, yeah. What technique do you use? This one. Oh my God, how did you do it? It's like, just YouTube it. She was so surprised that I knew how to like brew my own coffee with Chemex because it was so simple.
What hobbies do you have, Honeyball, besides podcasting?
I think my main hobby other than podcasting now is playing tennis. Yeah, I guess that's what I do when I'm not playing around with my kids and being with the family. But yeah. I think that's not that interesting.
I don't feel like I have hobbies.
Me neither.
I don't feel like I have hobbies. Obviously, I do a lot of extra stuff, but it all feels like this mad pursuit of like this singular thing. Which, and I'm not exactly sure what that is.
How do you describe a hobby?
Well, you know, there's always a reason for me to do something. It's like, I'm not coming here to do a podcast because I needed something to fill my day. Like, I certainly didn't. And you know, like, I'm learning. Like, I do Spanish classes, right? Which for a lot of people, my grandmother's doing Spanish classes. My grandmother doesn't need to learn Spanish. So my grandmother, it's a hobby. For me, I mean, I can't get around sometimes because I just don't know the words to use. So, you know, it's like, you know, I always, think about a lot of the friends who are founders and who do a lot of running, for instance. It's a very popular thing among
entrepreneurs.
I mean, there's plenty of popular
mountain
things.
Mountain biking.
Mountain biking and something like that. But for a lot of them, the running is part of their business persona.
Yeah.
And you can go running and then make business connections. I think Silicon Valley, long distance running or owning a Tesla, there's all these things that you can connect with and you can justify I didn't buy the Tesla just because I wanted one. It's helping me advance these other interests. And there's that kind of connectivity. And I always felt like that's where creation, creating stuff and doing stuff, it's always been like in service of something else, but I'm never quite certain of what that other thing is.
Yeah, maybe podcasting is a new golfing. And that is the way to meet people.
We should make a podcasting club. Think about it. Eduardo, our engineer in the studio, who owns Q4 Studios, is his business, and he does mostly music. It's very nice. But what if we had, you could come hang out, have some beers, you do a little podcast.
You meet people that are interesting people because they like to create podcasts.
I think it's a good concept. I wanted to do but I don't really enjoy drinking whiskey that much. I don't smoke cigars, so that's what you normally do at a club. But if you had a podcasting club.
And cigars, I wouldn't mind cigars though.
Okay, we can do cigars.
So get out there, create something.
Well, I think with that in mind, we can wrap up. Anibal, thank you so much for coming in. We want to have more people on the show. I know many of you know us personally. Hi, Mom. we'll put my mom on the show, but I don't know. We'll probably have a different conversation with my mom. But if you guys want to join the show, come hang out while we film, call in, let's do it. I mean, Anibal, you have guests every time, so we would love to continue to have them. And let us know. Follow us on Twitter. We got TechTuliaPod is our handle. We're on anchor.com/TechTulia. And if you want to follow us on Spotify or things like that, it makes it real easy to listen to all the episodes that we're going to continue to produce.
And let us know what you want to listen to.
Yeah, that's the thing. The more episodes we do, we need topics. So get in there on Twitter or whatever. DM us if you don't want to be that out loud. But
just don't burn more startups to the ground. Do good things.
Be honest, everyone. Honest enough.
All right.
Thank you, Matt. Vidal, thank you for inviting me.
All right, thanks, bud.